You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com, and join me on the other line for our first Monday podcast, weekly show of the regular season, and probably the most exciting podcast we might have this season, Mr. Tony East. Tony, Oladipo hits that three, the Carrie Oladipo matchup. I've been talking about it all week. What were your thoughts?
It was one of those basketball plays. I love talking about this exact thing when it happens to me, where I like my body involuntarily stands up. You know, like you don't think about it, like somehow you're standing and you don't mean to be standing because you're so excited. Like it was so crazy. And I kind of felt like he was going to make it before he even shot it. It was just so surreal.
I threw my phone in the air. I was literally watching it and I just tossed my phone up. Like I went, oh bleep, and just threw my phone up. Like, oh my God.
It was crazy. I don't care why that happens. The other time this happened was when Miles Turner dunked all over Tristan Thompson in the playoffs 2 years ago. I just stood up and I was like, why am I standing? Like I didn't choose to be standing and now I'm standing.
Oh, the last thing that happened for me was either when he hit that shot against the Bulls, the same kind of shot, or the Spurs game. That was really probably the last time I went, oh my God.
That's right. Oh my gosh. It's just, this is the first time I was on my couch at home for, and I was just like, oh my gosh, like I cannot believe it. Rebound coast to coast, like in Kyrie and Horford's face, like just beautiful.
No, and it was the ability to match Kyrie step for step. That was amazing. I mean, I thought, man, Kyrie, Kyrie killed this, and he's had an okay game, but Kyrie ended games, man, he is just a killer, you know, hitting like, what was that, corner three off the, like basically right out of the path with two guys in his face. You know, that three, Kyrie faked the play before to get the three open. I mean, I was like, man, he's going to kill him. And then
that crossover beat him. Green step back over Sabonis was filthy.
Yeah, well, and the way he threw off both defenders at the same time, basically to get the space, that was, but man, I mean, I've said it, Oladipo and Irving, I thought was one of the best matchups, end of games, just watch, because they're the two, now that DeRozan's out of the East, they're the two best guards in the East, like, I don't know, heads in a way. I mean, Kyle Lowry's up there, but depends where you value Simmons, whatnot. But those two guys are just two of the most exciting least players to watch. And it lived up to it. And the fact that Oladipo got the better of him with that 3-point shot that was so smooth that didn't even move the rim or the net is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when Kyrie chucked the one over Sabonis, I think that one made it 101-96. I was
Seven.
That's right. You're right. Thank you. When he hit that one, I was like, you know what? If you lose because Kyrie just is hitting these shots at the end, like, that's fine. You know what? Yeah, you played him tough the whole way, and Kyrie went off. And then two free throws, the three, and the steal. Like, we can't forget that he came across pretty far to steal that pass to Tatum. That was just all amazing.
Yeah, he broke up one of the signature Brad Stevens out of timeout plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's even just
coming impressive.
Yeah, and I also think, I mean, he almost even had the 3-point play, and then we were down 101 and 7, where he got in the lane, got fouled, and like just lost his footing enough where he couldn't get the layup into. I mean, in the step back shot could have been a three if he got his foot. I mean, there was just, he was like even not perfect, and they still won, which is just awesome.
Insane. I couldn't believe it. And you know what made it even crazier is like he already had hit. I know that was not my best segue, but it was even crazier because he'd already hit a game winner that week, like on another crazy play. It was just nuts.
Yeah, and that's a good kind of segue to probably – so we were on the podcast last week after the Trailblazers game. So since we last talked, they've had three close wins, three – you know, we had talked about it. We were kind of concerned, is this team going to be the same in close games?
Didn't we say that on the Monday show, like, we'll really see how good this team is when they play a close game, basically?
Yeah, well, and because – so the Minnesota and Portland games were 10-point games, but they really were close until the bench blew it. Yeah. But this is the first game where, one, the bench didn't blow it. The bench actually was – excellent in the start of the fourth quarter. I thought Evans was awesome. I mean, Evans was just carrying this team left and right. It felt like, at least the bench unit at times, but they pulled out three games, 5 points against the Knicks on an Oladipo corner three to seal it. Then they beat the Bulls on a Miles Turner block, which was huge. And then they beat the Celtics on Oladipo. So that's three close games. They're basically now 3-0, right? In games decided by, I guess New York was 6 points, but in clutch games, I guess you would call it, they are now 3-0.
Yeah, and they executed well down the stretch. McMillan had some beautiful plays at the end of the Knicks and Bulls game, and he had a good baseline out-of-bounds play at the end of the Boston game. You know, I think people are way too critical of his offense. It's not great, but it's not bad. Like, people are way too hard. Anyway, yeah, they executed well. They played the right matchups. They had Kojo in at the end of the Boston game. They had DC in, obviously, hitting the game winner against the Bulls. You know, he played the right guys. We're going to talk about
Sabonis in this game, too.
I'll turn to Sabonis later. But they were both in the right situations in those games, and it just culminated. It's just a perfect week of both excitement and results.
Yeah, I think – I don't know what – I mean, I think McMillan's coaching style actually has to be talked about, the extent that this team has become almost now no longer like an anomaly, but really good at executing in Lincoln situations. Uh-huh. I mean, even the Bojan missing that three-point shot against the Knicks, that was a great drawn-up play if you watch it. I mean, the execution was perfect. Bojan just got a little bit of the yips, which he does in the
game. He even said pregame against the Bulls, he's like, I can't believe they drew up a play for me and I airballed the open three.
Well, and the crazy thing was, against Boston, he had a pretty big three in the last 2 minutes, I remember, right? So, you know, he just – sometimes he gets the yips, but it's whatever. It's not a big deal, I guess, when you have that done to clean up for you. But it's just his ability either to know when he can just – trust Oladipo. Like, the fact that he didn't call a timeout too in the Boston game. Yeah. Oladipo said this, was like, I was kind of looking for the timeout. He didn't call it, which was kind of a play to get the defense off guard. Like, you could see the guys on the other team too were maybe expecting a timeout to be called, and Oladipo came across half court. But because it didn't happen, Oladipo had the open space to drain that three. So that was huge. And then the Bulls game, I mean, I think that a lot of it was just the defense at the end of games, but they also have a really good end of game defense, which is a lot of mm-hmm. coaching goes into that and the practicing and all those things they run.
Yeah, the Bulls one, I mean, Vic didn't actually hit the shot that time, but it was still his gravity, because when Bojan faked the screen, like, three Bulls defenders kind of swarmed him, and then they all had to come help on Bojan, and DC's just wide open to fake it and get the easy mid-range. So really, I mean, even though he didn't have the ball, his gravity is just a scorer after the screens made the team just panic and collapse on him.
Did the Bulls game vindicate the long two thing for the Pacers for the time being?
That was the first time the mid-range shot saved them. So, yeah, I guess.
Well, because Collison hits a 15 to 17 footer. Collison is money on that a lot of
times. Yeah, and he was wide open. I knew he was going to make it. I knew it as soon as he let it.
Well, and I knew when he got the ball in the corner, I thought he should pump fake this, because he can get a wide open shot closer to the basket, and he's really good at kind of just that short shot. So, overall, I would say, what, best week so far this season, obviously. Maybe
easily.
Is this the best week we've had when we've done this podcast over the last two seasons now?
No, the week last year when they beat the Warriors and a bunch of other good teams. You remember that?
I remember. Yeah, remember that.
They was on the West Coast trip. They beat, like, a bunch of good teams in a row all on the West Coast. That was pretty sweet, too. I think in terms of excitement, this one's number one for sure.
Yeah, I think so, too. So let's do an overreaction real quick, because I got a couple of them in my mind. But So where does Oladipo fall in the MVP race right at this moment?
Very probably higher than last year. I was going to say very high, but that's a bad that's like the worst description ever. His scoring's about the same. He's shooting about the same for most places, but his rebounding. We didn't actually get to say this when we were talking about his performances. He had 32 rebounds in the three games this week. He's up to over 7 a game. Which is just insane. And he had the one at the end of the Celtics game that allowed them to you know, have him push and then kind of slow down when he thought the timeout was coming. But still, like, it let them set up right away. You know, those are important things that make him more killer. He's passing just as well as last year. His steals are a little down, but they're coming up after having zero in the first two games. He's still almost up to 2 a game. Like, he's been just as good, if not better, than last year. And there hasn't been as many dominant guys. So I think he's higher up.
Yeah, and I mean, his points per game are about where they were last year, but everything else is up. His defense-wise, I mean, you talked about he made the steal to win the game against Boston. I mean, he's maybe – I don't know if he's the best two-way player, because there are lots of – but, like, he's maybe the best two-way guard in the league at this moment, at least.
Yeah, he's up there. Him and Chris Paul, probably, and Kyle Lowry, probably the best three.
Yeah, Simmons, maybe.
I probably
Simmons
just missed somebody very good. Yeah, I just couldn't think fast enough.
No, I understand what you mean. But I'm saying he's up there because he's probably, of all the guys you named, he will play the most games, more than Chris Paul will play. He'll probably score the most points of all those guys per game, at least, and he'll still have almost as good defense as they have.
Uh-huh. Give or take. It's insane how ridiculous. I think it's crazy how much – what I was trying to say, and I stumbled over my own words, is that the defense isn't valued enough, because, like, he was first-team all-defense, and he made 13 All-NBA last year. Like, I feel like even if he was terrible on defense last year, his offensive stats would have got him on an All-NBA team. Like, I feel like together in tandem, those things should propel him higher than he was. But he's been just as good this year, so.
So I've got a stat from our friend Grant over at, does he work for, what's he writing for now?
The Cocoa Winter Brands. He's everywhere. He is everywhere.
Okay, wherever he is. I saw his tweet and I thought it was really good. So in clutch situations this season, Oladipo is averaging 6.5 points on 72.7% field goal percentage, 71.4% three-point percentage, and 83.3 free throw percentage. I mean, that's...
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, that. So I think what it means by clutch situation is less than 5 minutes in the game within 5 points usually is what the NBA.com stats does for it.
Holy moly.
That's, I mean, like, that alone might be MVP numbers.
That's like above one true shooting.
Like, that's insane. Like, that alone might be MVP worthy.
That's what I'm saying. Like obviously, if, you know, the triple doubles with the rest of that 1 year, but he was so insane in the clutch that that's why I thought he deserved it that year. Like, it should matter a lot. I mean, when the game's in the line, can you call on someone? Absolutely, the Pacers can.
Which is crazy. I mean, I don't need to bring up the former guy who had his job at the top Pacer, but man, the stark contrast between Oladipo's ability to close out games and the previous best Pacer on the roster is just stark. It's a stark contrast.
A weird thing to say about CJ Miles.
Do you have an reaction you want to do? I can do another one, but if you've got one.
No, I'm bad. I'm really bad at overreactions. Corey Joseph, I think, is substantially better this year than last year. I know that's just me loving Kojo more than most people too. But he's shooting really well. His defense has been just as good. He's moving the ball more. And he's not shooting very much. Like, his shot attempts are the ones that are going down to get everybody else looks. And yet he's still being just as good, if not substantially better than last year. So I actually think that's really important. You know, they've had him, he closed two games this week. He always is guarding the lead guard when he's in. He's always in now when Vic's in with the Turner Sabonis duo because they want him in for the D. He's been really good. And that matters a lot. Having a good point guard on the floor at all times is so huge.
Yeah, he was great. That he was the reason Kyrie missed that shot. I mean, he had great defense on Kyrie at the end of games. The reason, I mean, that was all Kojo right there. And we've seen that do it against a guy like John Wall, Bradley Beal, maybe Bradley Beal back in last year against the Wizards. I mean, he's annoying. He's like almost an annoying defender. Like, he's just always on the point guards. He's always, you know, he's always in the right position. Doesn't get usually caught off into like stupid little fouls and tic-tac-y stuff. He's like, and keeps in front of you, forces you into a bad shot almost every time, it feels like.
Yeah, he's got his best impact stats since Greg Popovich was coaching him and putting him in the perfect role, which says a lot. And I'm not trying to dump on McMillan or Dwayne Casey, his coach in Toronto, but, you know, just being good, having good impact stats says a lot about him. And hitting the outside shots obviously helping him a lot. He's finishing super well at the rim. I think it's his third best season right now from 0 to 3 feet. All that stuff's just adding up perfectly. He's been awesome.
Yeah, he has. Can we – so my other overreaction for you is – we talked about this before the show. I think in another world, Tyreke Evans is James Harden is now. I mean, now, I mean, the beard thing aside, they have it, both have the same almost beard now. But I think the way he plays is very James Harden-esque. And there's a world where Tyreke doesn't get hurt or ends up somehow in the right situation, ends up becoming, would have been James Harden what he is. But still, the way Tyreke, I thought, played Saturday was James Harden-esque. And having that guy off the bench was just huge.
Yeah, he, you know what? In his career, he went Sacramento, who is just a shit show all the time. The Pelicans, who have the worst training staff in the NBA, where he was hurt a bunch. Then back to the Kings. Then Memphis last year, he finally had a kind of stable situation. He proved he's really good. So maybe in the, like you say, if he gets drafted, like if the Spurs draft Tyreke Evans right now.
Or even the Thunder, and that's per situation with those two guys. And then Houston, yeah, who's got a great everything.
Yeah,
Aaron Gordon couldn't have been happier to leave the Pelicans to go to Houston. I mean, that was like, he was so happy to do that.
Yeah, Tyreke was awesome against Boston. You're right, 17 points, 3 assists, and 2 turnovers. I see a lot of people complaining about his turnovers. He really doesn't turn it over that much. Anyway, he is like very good at scoring with the ball, and that is so huge with Vic on the bench. Like, Lance could do that every once in a while. I feel like Tyreke does it a lot. He's been over 10 points every game except for three. One was that putrid Minnesota game, so no qualms there. He was awful. But the rest, he's been pretty good. There is another world where he is a substantially more impactful or more well-known player.
Well, and the biggest difference between Tyreke and Lance is that Tyreke has a really good step-back three. I mean, yes, they ran that play for him where I think was Sabonis kind of set the screen and got him kind of like a foot behind the three-point line, and Tyreke just stepped back and drained it. I mean, that's what Tyreke can do that honestly not a lot of point guards off the bench can really even do.
45% from three for Tyreke this year. Crazy.
Yeah, he's been awesome from three this year. And I mean, Lance, for everything, that's the biggest difference in Lance when it comes to it, is that he can do that. Yeah. And that thing, that's just huge. But I I think his up and down is right now is him still figuring it out. You know, he's still trying to figure out his role with his team, where they want him to be. He did play more clutch minutes in the Boston game than he had, I think, in a while. I think he was into about the 4 minute mark, right? And that when they pulled him like that.
He was in pretty late. Yeah, they brought Kojo in. Well, they brought DC in for like two plays, and then they brought Kojo in there.
So. Yeah, so I just think once you get him, I say give him 20 games, about 10 in, he might have figured out his role, and this might be like an every game. You know, he might score 13 to 17 every night kind of thing, which would be really good off the bench because that was a bonus, and that's two really awesome bench players he got.
It is two really awesome bench players they have. Yeah, the two games he's been the best have probably been their two best wins, right? Destroying the Spurs in San Antonio in this Boston game.
Yeah, and that says a lot about what they need from him then.
Uh-huh, it sure does.
The last thing, though, I think we should talk about is TJ Leaf and his actual competence finally in this Boston game.
Yes, finally. Finally.
I was nervous. I was very nervous when he came. I'm like, why is he in this game in the third quarter? I was so nervous.
Everyone tweeted about it, and I so agreed. I was like, oh, my gosh, TJ Leaf's into the fourth quarter.
I was so – I'm like, they're going to – this is going to be like their close game right now, and they're going to blow. They're just going to blow because Leaf's out there, and he can't do anything. But, man, he was competent. He was showing signs of life, let's put it that way.
Yeah, you know, 7 points and three rebounds sounds like nothing, but for Leaf, while playing in the fourth and shooting 60%, that's a huge game.
Yeah, and he's what, the fourth option off the bench, so of course that's fine. That's fine if you're putting up that. I mean, fifth option, really. Obviously, you go to Joseph over him probably for shooting, but I don't know. I just thought Leaf was confident
too, which is a huge deal because him not hitting threes means he is like useless. So I'm glad I saw that one go in.
Yeah, and you know, he was fine off the glass. He made a tough one of the really tough rebounds I remember on the defensive end where it was like, I think he boxed that. Probably wasn't Al Horford, but Morris. I couldn't remember. Boston has a lot of guys that are the same height, those 6'11 guys. Might have been Theis even. But I just remember he made a tough rebound there, and that really helped them. And he made a couple of plays where I'm like, this guy's looking like a competent player. Maybe I should play him some more.
Yeah, it's hard to – he has to have a good matchup and actually be hitting shots. But he also had the dunks, which were nice. You know, he was getting the Thad Young duck-ins, which were good. Easily his best game of the year. And he was a +4 in a one-point win. So his contributions actually mattered. I appreciate that.
Yes, I thought we should at least praise Leaf. We'll take a quick break, and then we're going to do our Turner and Sabonis discussion. All right, Tony, we both disagree on this constantly. We are constantly, I mean, we were texting about this Saturday night. But Turner and Sabonis are, I think we're both on different sides of which one should be the closeout center, starting center, whatever it is. It's worth noting, Sabonis had maybe the best game of his career and maybe the best game he might ever have in his career, going 12 for 12 and 30 points against the Knicks. But Turner did match him pretty well on that Friday against the Bulls, having 18 points on 7 of 10 shooting, a huge block, 6 blocks, that huge block to win the game. I mean, Turner was fantastic. So he sort of, for a moment, I thought like Sabonis would overtake him just because he had another great game, but then Turner pushed that to bed. I guess we start with, were you fine with Sabonis ending the game against Boston?
I feel like when we have these discussions, we're in like court and one of us is a prosecuting attorney and one of us is a defensive attorney.
Oh, it's always me just throwing questions at you, but we should probably start there. I mean, Turner...
I tried to explain this to you over text yesterday. We should start. No, we shouldn't take Miller Time's idea. Their idea is very cool, the text cast thing. But
no,
I think
our text would be.
I was gonna say like editor text. I should have posted that video I sent you about Horford. I think Sabonis was absolutely the right move to close against the Knicks. I mean, he was unbelievably good in that game. You have to have him out there when he's not missing. He's rebounding. He's passing all right too. And he was having an obscenely good game, and it's not like his defense is that important when it's cancer out there. Because you can just park him under the basket, and Mitchell Robinson can only catch lobs at this stage of his career. So, yeah, he was a perfect guy against the Knicks. And then Boston is what we texted about, which was like when I think it's matchup dependent. And Horford is kind of a hard guy, and we both kind of talked about that too. Like I think against post bruisers like the Knicks guys, Sabonis should be the closer, and against more stretchy guys. Like Wendell Carter for the Bulls, Turner should be the closer, even though Carter fouled out. But against Horford, who's kind of good at everything, it's hard to decide, and you kind of have to go with the hot hand. And Turner had the very cold hand after
that. Oh, man, super cold, ice cold.
2-minute run, so it made sense to close with Domas. And Nate did a good job of getting the right guy in every time this week.
Yeah, Turner was just frustratingly bad. I mean, he came in, what, 2 turnovers, missed shot, and then you convinced me that the defensive play wasn't really his fault. That was... Was it Oladipo messed up on the?
Yeah, he like jumped up thinking Marcus Smart was gonna not take the screen, and then Smart took the screen, and Oladipo was killed.
Yeah, that was fair. I mean, Turner was just making a mistake. I mean, how do you double?
Double dribble was awful. That was
sick. He had a wide open lane to the layup if he just, you know, didn't double dribble.
It was tough. That was tough.
Right? I mean, he literally had the wide open. I mean, the way that it set up, he was like going to be able to. And the fact that on that same shot, he took the layup and not the dunk also was like really kind of. I know it didn't matter by then, but that kind of bugged me. It irked me just a tiny bit.
That has always frustrated me. We got to see him play. I've talked about this like five times on the show. Yusuf Nurkic disease, where they don't lay it up, or they don't dunk it. They lay it up when they can dunk it. Just dunk it. Just dunk the ball.
I mean, with his wingspan, he's what, 8 feet tall? And then you add his being able to jump. He can literally get like 9 inches above the rim, I'm assuming, with all his hands. And how he decides to lay that ball in is just ridiculous. But yeah, I understand with the matchup dependent thing. I just thought it seems like Sabonis in closer games, in kind of these more playoff type atmosphere games, which is kind of what this game was like, even in Cleveland series last year, where Sabonis just better off out there because Sabonis doesn't make as many mistakes. Turner, better defensively, can actually make more of an impact defensively. But when you just need to like go back and forth possession, get the ball to the depot, you'd rather have Sabonis in because he doesn't make as many of the stupid mistakes, the messing up the screens, the taking a dumb long two, things like that. Just like Sabonis is going to be the pick. He'll get if they double team Oladipo, he'll get the ball in the court and he'll go to the rim or kick it out. I mean, that's just. He's just more reliable, I guess, is the right way to put it.
The turnovers and the defense are where the flip are there. Like, Domas's only big mistakes are the turnovers. He had 6 in that Knicks game. It was brutal. But you cannot – like, that's literally the only thing you can – well, I guess fouls too. But you can't really criticize him for much in that game. He was so good. But, yeah, turnovers are usually where his problem are mistake-wise. But I agree with you about the screens. They're both good screeners, but Domas is better. He's, like, top 5 in the league at setting screens.
And he's better on the double – game of the double teams. He sees the 5-4 on 3 much better than Turner does.
Instead of popping, which is easier for passes out of that situation. Yeah, he's got that down. And there are more matchups, I think, where he makes sense than Turner does, given what I said about the stretch versus the post guy. And then defense, too. Like, if they're up 5, no matter who the matchup is, I think I'd want Turner in the game.
I would agree. If they're up by 5 or 10 points, I agree. The problem is, in a really close game, you just want the ball being only his hand and everybody to clear the foul, right? That's what you want. And I think Turner sometimes doesn't understand that as much as Sabonis does.
The double dribble was so bad. I was like, oh, man, you get him out of the game.
Yeah, and what was it last – it was last year in Cleveland, right? He screwed up on one of the pick and rolls. He went to the wrong side or got the wrong – or earlier but didn't want the switch, and then Turner tried to get him the switch. Like, it's just little things like that that just bother me time and time again about Turner games. But then he has to again against the Bulls where he is just like – a monster on defense in the defensive end where he's just swarming guys. He actually has gotten a much better defender guarding guys on the switch in the perimeter. I mean, where like Sabonis screwed that up against Kyrie in this game where Sabonis went to help and then he got thrown off and then they both got thrown off and they left Kyrie basically open, which was really, you'd rather have to take that shot 9 out of 10 times, you know, double team Kyrie at the ball out of Kyrie's hand at all costs, I would say. So it goes both ways. I just think at the end of games, Sabonis makes less mistakes.
Yes, that has been the case this year, definitely.
I think it was last year too, honestly.
Yeah, you did with your tweet interaction with that guy. I wish I had his at in front of me. He deserves justice for this discussion.
Yeah, this is for him. I don't remember his at.
I want
to
look
Hold
it up.
Hold on. I'm gonna pull it up. I don't have my phone next to me. Let me put it up.
They were good questions, so he deserves to be on the he deserves the feature here.
No, they were, and I understand what he was saying. I was just
but he was right. You know, you're both right, really. Turner had way more minutes.
So his name is Salty James at Adam Raps. Adam A. Raps.
Adam A. Raps. That's right. I remembered the Raps. I couldn't remember what the first part was.
Yeah. So
they were talking about this clutch play from last year. And like Turner played more, but also had more mistakes per minute. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So like I think the way it was is Turner played in 31 games of clutch moments or something like that. And Sabonis played in like 10. And Sabonis each took one shot in that time frame. Sabonis made like 60% of his shots, where Turner made like 30. But then Turner had more opportunity to make mistakes too. So,
right. Both ways. Yeah, the defense is the swing versus the offensive mistakes versus defensive improvement. What do you really want more? And with a stretch big, I think you want Turner. With a bruiser where you can mitigate a lot of Domas's defensive struggles.
I also think, though, Boston's an interesting case depending on who is their go-to scorer. Because if Kyrie is their go-to scorer and he's going to be doing those pull-up threes, you don't need Turner as much.
It literally doesn't matter who's out there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you just need somebody. What you want to do is just force. I mean, I don't know. This may be their plan next time. Just get the ball out of Kyrie's hands. Just double team. Like let Horford take that three or go to the rim.
He was bad until – not bad. He was not super impactful until the ending.
Yeah, but he's Kyrie Irving, and when you saw him hit that first corner three, you should have known that minute that on that he was going to kill you.
You're right. You just
recognize it. I mean, granted, he actually didn't because he missed that layup, but just keep the ball out of Kyrie's hands when it's like, do the best. I mean, Horford, let Horford take that three every time, honestly. I mean, I know he might make it, but it's still better off him taking than Kyrie.
I agree.
Yeah, but
everybody listening on Twitter, this should be the discussion, not who should start, because starting doesn't matter. No, closing matters.
And I will say, having both of them is important to this team.
It is.
Like they're, because it allows them to have different looks.
It does. People are always like, oh, they have to trade one. No, they don't. No, they don't.
No, and until they have a huge deficiency somewhere else, that's the problem is, like, right, when you've got two centers and then you've got, like, this terrible point guard or power forward, which I'm not, they don't have that right now, so don't take that as, but that's where we see the future need is at those two spots. That means make a decision, but right now you don't need that. You've got enough guys. You want the flexibility to show whole different kind of lineups, and together they've been competent, so I don't think that's the issue either. So it's on the court, on the floor together. So it's actually the ability to kind of do both, because, you know, if they had just Turner not Sabonis, the Knicks would have killed them, but if they had just Turner or just Sabonis and not Turner, they probably would have lost to the Bulls. So it goes both ways.
It does.
It's nice to have both. And they're honestly, Sabonis is a great bench player too with those guys. So that also is a huge thing.
It is. Yeah. Him anything, and Tyrese has been one of the best bench actions in the league.
Yeah. Well, I think we have both saw that coming.
That's Sabonis true. Such a good. Kalen saw it first, bleeds it into everybody else. So now we all see it.
Yeah. All right. Anything else in the discussion that you need to like get out of before we move on to our week preview?
No, I'm not like tired of talking about it. I'm tired of people telling me the same things. So
I understand. I think we won't do this every week. I think this week was a week to do it.
Last week Turner was bad, and we talked about what might happen. And then this week they were both good, and we talked about how it's important to play them in the right situations. But on Twitter, I just hear like rebounds and turnovers and defense. I'm like, I get it. Give me something else to talk about.
Yeah, and honestly, they keep winning with the way Nate seems to have his hands on the right motions and strings now, so it's working.
So who cares what you think? They're 7-3.
Yeah, exactly. And they've won, what, 4 of the last 5?
Yeah.
So who cares? All right, let's take another quick break, and then we'll do a week preview. Welcome back again to Locked On Pacers podcast. All right, Tony, do you have the B-ball ref numbers up? I have them up, but do you have them up for this week?
I got all three of them.
All right, so I'm going to go through the schedule real quick. We're going to preview. They play 4 games against 3 teams. So we're going to preview the Houston game, both games together. We'll probably talk about the difference between home and away and what it will be, but we have that. And then they play the Sixers, and then they play Miami. It's basically a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday schedule.
Yeah, it's playing the Rockets twice in a week kind of sucks. I kind of hate that because now, like, the Rockets' peak are terrible later in the year. Like, the Pacers don't get to play. Like, it seems unfair.
But the Rockets are not in a peak mode right now, right? They're pretty bad, so maybe it might be a good time to play them.
True. Yes, to follow up on the non-peaking Rockets, 22nd in pace, 23rd in offense, 22nd in defense. That is not good. But I don't think that's indicative of their team. Harden's missed 4 of their 8 games, I think. They've won 2 in a row.
That sounds right to me.
Yeah, they've won 2 in a row now, too. So they're starting to figure it out, and the injury's really bug. Oh, Ennis missed time. You know, they've had the injury bug. And for a shallow team like them, that's not good. So I think they are better than their record and number show, but they have not been as good as they were last year to start the year.
It's worth noting, too, Eric Gordon is day-to-day as of yesterday.
Oh, wow.
So that could be an issue for the game. Brandon Knight was out as of Friday. Wow. So they might be actually short-handed already.
I feel like Gordon will do everything he can to play in his home state, though.
Yeah, that's true. He loves coming to DM. I mean, this is like a homecoming for him every time. I mean, he's probably at this moment the best player of the league from Indiana, him or Mike Conley, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Am I missing anybody? I'm trying to think. Am I missing anybody?
No, they're probably the best two from
at least from Indianapolis. They're the best two from Indianapolis.
Yeah, Trey Lyles might get there someday.
Gary Harris could someday. Gary Harris might be there.
But it's probably those two.
Yeah, I love Eric Gordon when he comes. I mean, I'm such a grad, so I love Eric Gordon. That's just me personally, he is, and he's just. He was really good in the playoffs last year, so that's why I love seeing him do that.
That's another storyline for this team. He has not shot the ball well this year.
Yeah, he has. So I'm going to go back to your point, though, on the Rockets, this kind of being not basically the record not being an indication of what they're going to be like going forward. I think you're right, and I think that's what kind of scares me right now is I feel like they're 3-5, and they might finally be getting over the hump to get to, you know, they're probably going to be a 55-win team, if I had to guess, 55, 60 wins. Maybe somewhere around that range. So, yeah. You know, that means they have to win. I mean, what, there's 74 games left. That means they have to win another 52 at least of those 74. And I feel like they might finally, this might be like, they beat Indiana twice in a week and that gets them over the hump to like push towards that kind of run.
Yeah, Melo had two not bad games in a row, which for him is a win these days. So that could mean two things. That could mean they played the Nets and Bulls, who suck, and he finally had a chance to score on guys who aren't very good at defending. That also could mean he's finally fitting into that system where everybody thought he could actually be okay. And if that's the case, that's scary because that could get Melo to be good again. Capella's been great. He's always great. He's the perfect guy for those guys. And Harden's back. So just a lot of things are looking up for them, even though they struggled for their first six games.
So it is worth noting they do play the Saturday before the Sun game. So it is a back-to-back for them. And they play in San Antonio, not a far travel from San Antonio back to Houston. But they play actually at 8:30 in San Antonio. Or I'm on Central Time right now. So that's where I'm 9:30 Eastern Time. And then come back and play at 8 o'clock Eastern Time on that Sunday. So this
additionally, quicker the turnaround. Monday game is their third road game in four nights. That's
so tough. So they, I mean, they might, this also could be a reason for their record current. I mean, this could help kind of keep pushing their record down with all these traveling. I mean, the Pacers is the third game of a 5-game road trip too. And they already won their first two. So what would you say? Most times you go on a road trip, you win. If you're a good team, you win 3 or 4 of them. If you're a bad team, you win 1 or 2, right?
Yeah.
Not any, if any. So, I mean, they play Oklahoma and City and the Spurs next after the Pacers. So that could be, they could theoretically end up going 2 and 3 if they don't beat the Pacers. I guess, I don't really have a great grasp on this Monday game of what we're going to get just because Houston has been so kind of this year. And I feel like a couple of times they play the Pacers last year, they killed them both times, but the year before they would miss a bunch of, they would have those kind of really bad 3-point games where they take 50 threes and make like 10 or 12 of them. So, and I don't know if they go in or not. Like that's what I feel like. If they go in, they win. If they don't go in, they lose. It's like very classic, like very, very simple breakdown of basketball, but I mean that's what it felt like when the Pacers played them a couple times.
I'll throw a stat at you that might make you think at least.
Yeah, go ahead.
So the Rockets are allowing, their defense actually has allowed the second fewest 3-point attempts and the first fewest makes for opponents this season. So they're actually good at forcing teams to not take the three. Against the Pacers, who already are selective, do you think that means the Pacers take their normal amount and it'll just work out? Or will they take even less than normal and that'll go to what the Rockets want?
So I'm thinking it's going to be the Rockets take 50 threes, the Pacers take 50 mid-range shots. And then we'll see if the Pacers can make, let's say the Rockets shoot like 35 or 40% of them, so they make 20 of those, so the Pacers can make like 30 of their 2-point shots, basically. But the difference, right? The Pacers make 31 of 50 mid-range twos, and Rockets go 19 of 50 on threes. The Pacers win that battle, technically.
Yeah. Yeah, Capella being a good rim protector makes it hard because you get by the first line of defense for Houston, and you're running at this pretty good rim-protecting guy. But at the same time, you know, they just got to keep it moving in reversal because Harden is not a good defender on the perimeter, so if they can get him moving around, they could potentially get some good looks. But they are good at keeping guys away from the 3-point shots. Ennis, PJ Tucker, Chris Paul, all really good perimeter defenders. So it's going to be tough to manufacture the looks that the Pacers already don't really seek out that much. But we'll see if that ends up in a balance in the Rockets' favor or the Pacers' favor.
You want to do X Factors and Butchers? Because I have an X Factor, but I want to hold it till we do that.
I think can we just pick the two obvious Butchers? Or are you going to pick a
You know, I was leaning towards Capella, but I actually it kind of goes counter to my – X Factor, so I probably can't. So we'll just do the two obvious Butchers, Harden and Paul.
Harden and Paul.
When Harden plays, 28 points a game and 8 and almost 9 assists. Uh-huh. So that's crazy. That's why he'll probably be in the MVP discussion over Oladipo, because Oladipo isn't quite at that kind of numbers. But that's crazy. And then Chris Paul is at, 19-9 too?
19-9. Yeah, that's their second best player at 19-9 and the best perimeter defender on the team. Like, that is crazy.
So you're telling me you don't want to pick Carmelo as the X Factor. Butcher.
Carmelo could be the Butcher, dude. He could be the reason the Pacers win.
Well, then I'd make him the X Factor.
Yeah, that's true.
Not the Butcher, but yeah.
Carmelo could be the X Factor.
I guess I'm interested to see if Eric Gordon plays at all, because I think he could actually be kind of, especially in the one in Indianapolis, could be a Butcher. But that's just because he's home, and I think I forget what his stats are actually in it against the Pacers, but I feel like that's kind of like a classic thing where the guy comes home and has a huge game.
Yeah. Well, that'd be good for him too. He needs to turn his season around. Maybe get his trade value to Minnesota up a little bit too.
You think that's what's happening ultimately? Well, let's do the Houston thing.
I don't know. I listened to the Woj and Zach Lowe podcast today when I was mowing some grass.
Do you want to tell people why you're mowing grass today?
No, I mowed my parents' grass as a favor, but we'll leave it at that.
You don't want to give a shout out?
I don't think he's going to listen. My dad broke his collarbone, so I was helping out around their house.
Well, you're a good son.
But I listened to them talking about how the sliding scale of trading a certain number of first if they are going to include Eric Gordon. But that's not a Pacers-related thing. That's just a thing.
I was in that same podcast, too, by the way. I understand. Because they were like, if you throw in Gordon, you put three in or two in.
Right. So they might include him. I was just being fun for the show. But yeah, he could turn around. That'd be nice. Their bench has not been good this year, so they could really use that.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I'll say is that I would love if they could figure out how to not trade Gordon, have a lineup of Paul, Harden, Butler, Gordon, and Capella out there.
Oh, my gosh. That'd be awesome.
That'd be scary. But that's beside the point. They won't probably have to see Jimmy Butler gets traded there anyway, so they'll play him twice this week. X Factor. I want to go first because I've been holding him back. I think the X Factor in this game is Miles Turner.
Nice.
And it's keeping Capella away from the rim by stretching the floor. That's his key. We always say this about a lot of times when we play traditional centers, and it never happens. It rarely happens that he actually does it. Yeah, I mean, remember, Turner rarely actually, like, he plays well against certain guys, but it rarely ends up being an issue where he actually is able to stretch the guy away from the floor. But that would be key because
it's about him hitting that long two that he shouldn't be taking. But yeah,
that's true.
I see what you're saying about actually pulling the guy from the rim. It doesn't happen, but
that's
like,
what I mean.
Him hitting the outside shot does happen. I
feel like. Well, and part of it is him pulling the guy either far away from the rim where he has to collapse onto.
Yeah.
Or so like enough so the defense has to collapse on the guy in the center so the guy can kick it out. And that's always the key. Like, if Capella's a step behind on Oladipo's drive to the rim, and then that forces the defenders, other ones to collapse, and that opens up the other parts of the floor, which will flip the long 2-3 point thing, because if the team is constantly collapsing on Oladipo in the center, they'll have 3-point shots for Bojan and for Thad and for McDermott when he's out there and stuff like that.
Yeah, his defense on Capella is going to be important too. You know, you take one wrong step towards James Harden. Like, the second you take the step, the lob's going up. And you know it too if you're the defender. So staying at home, not too much at home to like let him get easy threes or easy shots, but staying enough at home to not let Capella just get dunk after dunk is going to be big for him too.
I guess, are we going to see DC on James Harden the way we saw DC on Kyrie?
I don't know. I'm not sure what they're going to do. I was surprised that DC was on Kyrie. I'm not going to lie. I thought DC would get Jaylen Brown. But yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. That's a tough matchup. Because, I mean, is it really that much better to have Vic on Harden and DC on Chris Paul? Like, not really. So
I don't want to see him. I guess if it depends if they start, if Gordon plays or not. But they would start Carmelo if Gordon doesn't play, right? That's probably what they would do.
No, they usually go Ennis Tucker 3-4.
Like, I can see Oladipo just being on Ennis and just roaming. And just put Bojan on one of Harden and DC on Paul.
Yeah, that would not be a bad idea. My X Factor, because of Mr. Carmelo Anthony, is going to be Tyreke Evans. Because I think Tyreke Evans could have a good game scoring against this bench. They're not deep. Their bench defense is not very good, especially when Capella's out of the game, which is super rare. But they have, like, Melo at center, so they have just no rim protection. Sometimes Isaiah Hartenstein is playing backup center for them. If you don't know that name, it's because he's not very good, not a good rim protector. So, yeah, it could be a good game for Reek to control some second unit and keep him afloat.
That might be the reason if they're going to win this game would be the bench unit. Because the Rockets in general were sort of – their bench is kind of, I mean, crap, to be honest. It was last year in the playoffs, too. It's been – I mean, they patched work together with a bunch of Carmelos and Carter Williams and stuff like that. So, the Pacers, which we – really, I guess really haven't seen it, except maybe in San Antonio where the bench just like, you know, actually like, you know, takes the team back to the lead or kind of comes them back.
They were huge against Boston.
Yeah, but the Boston game was close the whole way, right? Well, I guess,
but the Boston,
I guess the Bulls game, the bench did it too.
I think when Boston, with Boston being so deep, just keeping up with their bench is huge, you know?
Yeah, I would say the Bulls game, the bench, because the starters came out kind of flat against the Bulls.
So flat. They were down like 27-8.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess the bench has been able to kind of not necessarily take them all the way back, but to cut at the leads. I just think this time the bench might have to, like, do more than that even, I guess.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Take to the next level. Underrated part two, we should talk about Chris Paul and DC were teammates back in the Clippers, so that would be a good little matchup to watch.
That is true. We didn't even say Gerald Green's name. Gerald Green's pretty good. He's not a good defender.
Former Pacer, right?
Former Pacer and not a terrible player. So just keep an eye on him. He's a high flyer. He could embarrass some Doug McDermott, TJ Leaf stuff.
I'm trying to remember how long he was in Pacers for. Half a season? Was he there a full year? He
got traded for someone weird, I think. Like a meaningless trade.
Was it like a Scola trade back in the day?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. I'm really not going to look it up.
We don't remember this.
Yeah.
He played the whole year in 2012, 2013.
Okay. So he's probably a free agent signing then.
Yeah.
So they play him twice this week, the start of the week and the end of the week. 2-0, 1-1, 0-2. What are your thoughts?
I think they win the home game just because it's a third and four nights for Houston. And they're riding high from a nice week last week. But I don't think they'll win in Houston.
I think they go 1-1, but I'm actually feel like they're going to win the one at Houston, more likely to win that one because the back-to-back is my only
thought. Yeah, back-to-backs are just crazy.
But I feel like Gordon will probably play because he only day-to-day will play by the Sunday game, so that could be a difference too.
That's true.
But maybe on a back-to-back, Gordon won't play if he's still hurt. And I feel like they sometimes rest Chris Paul too in back-to-backs. But
more importantly, we both picked 1-1. So.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to win both. I mean, I almost lean towards 0-2 because this team whipped their butts last both times. I don't know.
Smoked them.
Yeah, so I would lean towards 0-2, but I think they could get one of them just because they play them the same week and I could kind of throw things off.
Yeah, it does. It means a lot more that it's in the same week. Like Denver last year, I can't remember who it was. They played twice in the same week for both their games last week. The Clippers, that's who it was. It was like, dang, this sucks because they didn't have Blake Griffin anymore. Different team.
Yeah, they had the Pacer killer Tobias Harris.
Hey, Adam, you want to talk about the team that currently has a worse record than the Pacers, the Philadelphia 76ers?
Yeah, I do, because this is actually the best matchup of the week. Houston's good, but because it's a division on ESPN, or not division, division, conference on ESPN, two teams competing for a top three, top four seed. And Embiid's been crazy.
They're against Philly twice. They're really trying to hype up this matchup, which I like. I think that's a cool idea. And the Sixers are 6-4. They are sixth in pace, fifth in defense, 24th in offense. Simmons and Embiid are just unbelievably good defenders. So if they can get some offense going, they're going to be super good. They just got Wilson Chandler back from injury, which is a big deal too. Not just more depth for them. But yeah, this will be a great game. I'm really excited. And I think both teams are going to be at their highest level for this one.
It's worth noting, and I'm just going to do it now, my butcher. Embiid has had three games of 30-plus games, 30-plus points in the last three games. He's got 31, 41, 39. He's had, seven games of 30 points or more this season? I mean, he's just a killer.
He is a terror. 29.6 points, 12.4 rebounds per game for Embiid right now. And he's not even shooting as well as he did last year from three. So he is just unbelievable. And easily the best – not easily the best defender on this team too. I mean, Simmons is also very good, but Embiid just protects the paint. He roams out. Like Sabonis and Turner are probably not going to have great games. The way to beat Embiid is like, this is so funny. The way to beat Embiid is playing like a style of basketball he's never seen before, like Al Jefferson did last year, which was
You got the reference in. Yes,
I got it for you. How do I get an Al Jefferson reference in? And I will be tweeting this spin move video before this game. But that's really the way to beat Embiid is just throw something at him he's never seen before because he is just a terror on both ends. So, yeah, he is – I mean, I wanted to pick him as my butcher too. I get that we both can't pick the same guy, but, oh, man, he's good.
Yeah, I think also Pacers Fortune's games at home. That's going to be – that's a positive. I'm trying to think. So they beat them twice last year. Both times it really felt like Oladipo was the reason they won both those games. I mean, this the one of the ones was kind of a blow – not blow up per se, but like an 8-10-point win. But I felt like Oladipo was the reason they won both times. The one time they lost because Redick just killed him.
Yeah, that was crazy. At the end of the game, I forgot about that. I wonder if that's when KP was like, we need that guy.
I think he, at that moment, he's like, we need some kind of shooter to match that guy because we quite have that. And so we got the knockoff version of Doug McDermott.
And Redick's three-point percentage is 39.3. I was going to put like an only before that because he's usually better shooting that, but he's shooting 9 of them a game. Like, that is crazy. That is insane.
Yeah, he might be the other butcher, right?
He could be. He's averaging 18 points a game literally just on chucking threes and, like, making timely cuts. Like, he is so good. Especially against the bench, he could be so, so lethal. I mean,
he's embraced the Kyle Korver role.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what I was going to say. The second he's on the floor, he's in that Korver role just running around the line. If you lose him for 1 second, boom, points.
You know what's crazy? So he's shooting only 39% from the field because he's basically only taking threes.
He is shooting 38.4% from the field. That's crazy.
That's crazy. I mean, that's insane.
He's better from three than two. That's funny.
So is he your other butcher then?
Yeah, he's a good pick. Yeah. I mean, Simmons is what he is. Like, I don't think he's going to have an above or below average game based on the matchup. He's going to impact the game in a bajillion areas and play good defense. Like, he's a very good player, but I just don't see him. I think Reddick getting hot or like Embiid having another monster game could swing the game towards the Sixers more than anything Simmons could do.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if they put DC on Simmons again.
That worked last year.
Yeah, where they just kind of said
both worked.
Yeah, well, because DC has the somewhat of the speed to not get beat by him, and not that he's the height's right. Gonna kill him every time, but like, and DC kind of just lets him shoot his shot because let Simmons take jumpers. Who cares? Virgil's not gonna take him, but yeah. If he wants to take him, let him take him kind of thing is kind of what their motto was. They actually played, I thought they played Philly the best until Boston series, obviously, but I feel like of any team they played Philly the best last season in terms of like how to attack Simmons is not ability to shoot.
Yeah, Boston did really good in the playoffs too.
Yeah, that was the other one, but they're well. I mean, it's the theme of well-coached teams figure out how to attack Philly, right?
Yes,
I
guess, that's correct. Philly has done well defending the three. Also, they're giving up the fourth worst percentage on threes, only 32.1%. They're getting to the line a ton. They're shooting a ton of threes, so efficiency mavens. They lead the league in rebounds per game, so could be a big Sabonis minutes game if they need the boards. But I think the way to get at them, they're starting Fultz, and he has not looked great. I mean, I'm not going to comment on it, his like story and stuff. It's tough to – it's kind of touchy. But his defense isn't very good yet just because he's young and not polished. So I think going at him is going to be a nice way to get some points.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that kind of leads into my exit for the Pacers, and that is I think I'm going to put Darren Collison because I think they're going to put Fultz on him, right?
Yeah, I agree.
They're going to put Simmons onto Oladipo because that's what I would do. So – and I feel like DC is going to have one of those games where, like, just has a veteran game where, like, I've been in the league for 10 or whatever, 11 years. You've been in the league for 2 years. You've really only been for one if you count the amount of games you played. I'm going to, like, kind of beat you up.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking about picking him. I'm not going to. But I was thinking about picking him, too, just because of what he can do. And we didn't talk about Robert Covington just because he's a very good defender. And I actually think Covington's going to guard Oladipo.
Okay, that's fair. I can see that happening for sure.
I'm not sure. Either one makes a lot of sense, honestly.
Well, then where do you put Simmons? You put Simmons on Young?
I think you put Simmons on Bojan and say, okay, now their two biggest best scorers are being guarded by our two best defenders.
Okay, so let's move some dominoes here. So then you got Redick onto...
Redick does not start.
Oh, Redick doesn't start. So then you got Saric onto Young. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm about to pick Thad because Saric is on him.
Okay, no, that makes sense. You're right. But I'm thinking because Redick's going to play clutch minutes, though. He's going to be the in for Fultz.
Yeah, he'll close. Oh, yeah. He's fourth in minutes. Their starting lineup from last year is their closing lineup because it's better than having Fultz in. But yeah, Dario is not shooting well this year. He's still an impactful player because he can space the floor, but not shooting well this year, and his defense is iffy. So I think they can get some buckets going at Thad with the duck-ins or having him set more screens than he usually does.
Plus, I mean, I could see Thad being switched on to Simmons a lot, too.
Yeah, I can too. And like you said, with DC on offense, you know, if it's going to be a veteran game for Thad on D2, I mean, this could be a great time to assert himself. And I'm sure he doesn't really like Philly because of his time there when they were just tanking.
Oh yeah, and they traded him away because they're just sort of like, oh yeah, we're going to blow this up and go.
Oh, you're older than 25. See ya.
Yeah. I guess the one thing I'd say for Philly is the fact that they had a number one pick and the guy is like as literally impactful as he is at this moment and looks like he is the next great bust after Anthony Bennett. I mean, that's just so sad for them.
But I just feel bad for him given how it's all gone down. I don't think he's like, I'm not giving up on him yet, but.
No, but you know what it reminds me of is the Dario Milicic. Is that when he got picked by the Darko. Detroit team? Darko Milicic, sorry, not Dario, Darko. And when he got picked by the Pistons, they were like, what, did they win the championship or either – they were in the finals, whatever that year, and they had the second overall pick and picked him instead of Carmelo. And they just they still had a good team, but they could have had like this all time great team.
I think Fultz will figure it out. I really do.
Imagine if Tatum was on this team.
I know. I think we're doing the wrong thing when we celebrate every time Fultz hits a three and does like treat him like a normal rookie, man. Like it's kind of what he is this year.
But. Yeah, you're right. I mean, he's just gonna have an up and down his first season. But I mean, it's always the what if, right? You could have had Tatum, and that's what kind of makes you like, oh man, we could have had the Tatum Simmons Embiid, which would have been like three just incredible length. Yeah,
I mean, it's just 0.7. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's all it is. But do you think they win this week?
Oh man,
they're
always tight down to the wire. Took a Redick miracle for that one win to happen last year. But I think the Pacers will win this game. I don't know why. I don't, you know, anecdotally, I feel like all the matchups favor the Sixers, and I feel like their talent's really good. But yeah, I think the Pacers win. I really do.
I think the only reason they win this week is because that game, sorry, not this week, this game is because they're at home, and that just seems to be a huge boost for them. I mean, I think the home crowd, they're going to start to get, I mean, it was really big Saturday night, but they're continuing to get bigger with the Colts, as terrible as they are. This is the team in the city now. It is. It's the team. They're exciting. Oladipo is just, he's exciting. He's fun. He brings a whole nother level of like, kind of like he's kind of a clown at the same time as being an awesome player. And he brings something back to where this reminds me of the way fans felt about that like Paul George, Roy Hibbert, David West, Lance, George Hill team. Like that's kind of what we feel like at right now. Like people are starting to realize, oh, this team is like really good and they've got exciting young stars. So it's good to see that kind of back. I think that will help drive attendance to these games and the atmosphere will get crazier and stuff like that.
I'm glad they're 7-3 so people can stop tweeting at me and saying they're not meeting their expectation. Like what the hell?
No, the Boston game is going to be kind of the turning point in terms of like, oh, this team is like as the top ticket in the city, basically.
I agree. We got to talk Heat too.
Yeah, I know. So we got one game left this week. Nope, we're not going to take a break because we did our two breaks already. So let's go right into the Heat game. The Pacers, you want to do the stats in the Heat?
Yeah, 12th in pace, which is shocking to me given their roster. 14th in offense, 17th in defense. So it's just like it seems like every Heat team for the last year is pretty average.
So this Heat team is what?
To the record, 3-5.
Yeah, so they're 3-5, and they're basically the same team they've been for now. This is the third season they have basically the same team.
Added a Bam Adebayo from
that's it. But right, it's the Dragic,
yep.
Wade who left, came back. You got Whiteside. You got I guess they don't have who am I blanking on his name now? Crap, I'm blanking on the guy's name.
So here,
Deion Waiters. Deion Waiters is the one they don't have. Sorry,
if you have Deion, he's just hurt, not playing.
Well, I mean, he's the only guy on the team who's been there, but he's hurt. He's the difference, kind of guys who aren't there between the last.
They
couple years.
Do not miss Deion Waiters one bit. Because this is what I was going to say. Josh Richardson has been unbelievable and showing why he has the valuation of the Jimmy Butler trade in his hands. 40% three-point shooting, over 20 points a game while playing his good defense. And then Rodney Magruder, who missed all of last season, which I thought was a big deal because he's a good player, is playing 34 minutes a game and scoring 15 a game and shooting also extremely good from the outside. They're getting a ton of production from their guards, and Whiteside hasn't been useless. So they actually look like a little bit better than last year to me.
Yeah, you know what's crazy? If they played the Lakers this week, it'd be like the three teams Butler could go to. It'd be crazy. I don't know. So I guess my thing about this Heat team is they all, because they're so well coached. I mean, this is another
thing.
Is that they always get the Pacers once a year. Like they always just get them. They beat them up. I mean, the Pacers will get them. Like I think the Pacers beat them both times in Miami last year, but then lost the one at home, if I remember right. I mean,
that was the game they shot like 0-15 from three.
That's right. I mean, I don't know if that was the Heat's coaching or the Pacers just struggling, but the Heat always didn't get them. That's why this kind of worries me as a game that I'm concerned about. But the problem is there's nobody on the Heat look at like, oh, I'm really, really scared of that dude. Like, right. You know, Whiteside is, you know, a force when it comes to blocking shots and kind of being a rim protector. Dragic is really good. Wade has his moments sometimes. Richardson is having a great year. I don't see where they're going to get who beats them, but I feel like they could still lose.
They have like, they're a good test case for what happens when you have like 9 above average players, but none that are like really good.
Yeah. What? So their best player, Dragic, is probably what? What was he ranked on the SI list? Do you remember?
I do not. He was the worst. I think he was one of the worst all-stars in NBA history last year, though.
Oh, right. He was an all-star last year because of the stupid East-West rules. I mean, I would probably put him, in the 50s range, right?
No, he's probably high 30s or 40s to me.
Okay, right. Because if I'm right, Booker was 50 on the SI list. But yeah, you're probably right. So their best player's in the 40s. Their next best player is even on the top 100 list?
I'm pulling it up right now. They have all 100 in one place. Let's see. Dragic, we got him at 45.
Oh, I was right. I was closer than you. To
that
you.
One's good. Whiteside not present.
I would look Waiters maybe.
Josh Richardson is 71.
Okay.
The only other one on there. Let me just type Heat. That'd be way faster.
Is Waiters on there? I don't think he is. He
wouldn't. No, Dragic is on there. Oh, Olynyk is at 93.
Okay, so first of all, remember Olynyk made it over Tyreek Evans. Just remember that right now.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry, that's some BS. But
he's good though. He's not. I don't think he's better than Tyreek, but he is a good player.
No, he's good, but he's not better than Tyreek.
No, I agree.
But again, this. You're right. This Heat team is like very eerie. Of like, we just have 9 average NBA players. A couple who are better than average, but nothing that's like spectacular. And they're still, D Wade is still kind of like doing his stuff out there.
And D Wade's kind of holding them back. Like, they have to honor this dude for his retirement tour because it's freaking Dwayne Wade. But he has been.
They have to. I mean, he's the reason that team got to where they were. I mean, it's 06. He basically got LeBron there. Like, D Wade is the reason there's like Miami basketball has any like history to it.
Do they play? Is this the only time they play in Bankers Life this year?
I do not know.
Dwayne Wade last game in, this isn't even in Bankers Life. This is in Miami, so no.
Yeah, they play. They played this Heat team the following week. So they play also Miami in the same in a week.
I think they only play once in Bankers Life. Though. I think we only get one. We only get one more Wade in Bankers Life next Friday.
Yes, maybe you should go to that game. That'd be
I should.
D Wade for all his stuff. I mean, there's lots of things with D Wade and like how he kneed Paul George in the head and probably cost him an NBA Finals appearance a couple of seasons ago, or some of his dirty stuff with Lance. I mean, but D Wade is a great player. I mean, he's a little bit of a underrated dirty player, and I think he's pacer wise, he brings up bad memories because him and LeBron, especially like in 12 and 13 when Wade was still kind of at his peak, were just killing Indiana. But you got to respect him.
So another big deal for them, James Johnson hasn't played this year either, and he's very good. I really like James Johnson. He could be back. They already announced that he'll miss their game on the 5th against Detroit. So TBD if he'll be up and at him for a game on the 9th. Or the 9th? Yeah, the 9th.
I mean, Grodick is also day-to-day with a foot. But I believe he's supposed to play Monday.
I think he'll play, yeah.
Yeah, I have him on my fantasy basketball team, so I'm hoping he plays for Monday.
I'm going to Whiteside as my butcher because he's been – oh, sorry. I was going to make this overarching stat before I said the sentence. The Heat lead the league in offensive rebound rate, very high number, 28.2%. That makes White, you know, Whiteside, Bam, Justice Winslow even rebounding on the offensive glass very well. You know, I think Whiteside's my butcher. You know, if he gets a bunch of offensive rebounds, gives them a bunch of possessions, that'll keep the Heat in the game. So they can box him out. They can do it.
I think Rock Richardson is probably the butcher. He's playing so well right now.
That's the other choice.
He's playing so well. I guess we're going to see Bogut on him, I guess, is my thought.
Probably, yeah. I don't see him putting Vic on a guard.
Yeah, and they don't always put Vic on the best offensive player on teams anyways.
No, they don't.
And they'll probably put Vic on D-Wade when he's in, I guess. If D-Wade, he's not going to start, but if D-Wade's in, they'll probably put him on him. Yeah, so I guess I would see Bogut on sitting, which probably means a good day for him because Bogut is a decent defender, but not always great.
Yeah. Richardson's pretty quick to the basket, but not laterally. So maybe a good Bojan matchup, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Bojan can still get beat pretty easily, but I mean, that's the one you give up. You give up his really efficient offense is the ability to get beat a ton by players.
You're first. I'm sorry. X Factor.
I've done them first both times for both games. So you can go first next factor.
So I'm doing Sabonis.
Ooh, that's an interesting one.
Sabonis going against Bam Adebayo.
Best matchup for the game, probably.
I like that matchup for the Pacers. Bam's good. I really like that guy. I think he'll be a good NBA player someday. In fact, he's pretty good now. But I think Sabonis can beat him up. He's just better. So
I would agree with you. I think this could be a big game for Sabonis.
Yes.
This could be like a post-up game. He
had one really good game against the Heat last year. Like the
He had a 24-point, I believe he was like 10 of 14 shooting and the first time they played the Heat because we were all still kind of – it was the first game he came back from his injury or second game he came back from his injury. Right. It was right after the Philly game last year. So really the scheduling kind of the same as last season, which is probably makes sense because they probably schedule the same things in every stadium each year. Like, you know what I mean? But they played Miami in Miami after they played Philly in Philadelphia on that weekend.
Yeah, you're right. I remember that.
I just don't know why I remember that, but I do. I guess my X factor, you know, I know they lost to Miami in a game where second game of the season last season where Oladipo like first to the inkling of the coming out party, and I think Oladipo's this kind of his game, his time to have like. See, the problem is he still hasn't had a 30-point game, right? So he's all been below 30. So I don't know what he's gonna do, but I feel like he has to break 30 at some point, right?
He's been over 20 every game but the first one. But yeah, you're right.
He hasn't broken 30 yet, but like it's not like he hasn't been great. I mean, obviously, he just – it seems like at some point he's going to have one of those games where he goes like 12 of 20 for 35 points.
Yeah. I hope it happens soon. That'd be awesome. That would be the MVP ladder too.
Yeah, well, his problem is he's so consistent at 25, let's say 25, 7, and 5 every game that he can't quite break that like 23-point hump because of his first game.
You're right.
But it's fine. You think they win this one?
Yes, I do. I really do. I like the Heat. I actually like the Heat for some reason this year. I watched them. I forget which game I watched them. I watched them in one of their wins, which, given that they're 3-5, is not that crazy. I think it was Portland that they played. I can't remember. But yeah, I like a lot of their players, but I still think the Pacers are better talent wise. Now that the Pacers bench is good, you know, this a team like this with no stars, that they'll find a matchup that works and be able to win.
Yeah, I'm hesitant on that. I think they lose this one. I don't know why. Miami always gets them once a year.
Sixers, so you're good to say that.
I think they beat them twice last year, actually, in the three times they played. So I mean, Miami always seems to get them. It might be just be supposed to be a good coach, and they have good enough talent to do that. I think they might lose this one. I feel like I pick win every time the Pacers do, so I think I have to kind of be on the pessimist side for once.
Yeah, who knows? It'll be fun. I think this will be the most fun game of the week, personally. I mean,
really? I think Philly will be.
Let me rephrase that. In terms of narrative, I think Philly will be the most fun. In terms of basketball, I think this one will be the most fun.
Oh, I think in terms of Embiid pettiness and anger when Turner maybe beats him, actually, will be fun.
That would be nice.
I just can't believe Embiid talks so much trash, but like only in Pacer Twitter is that Al Jefferson play shown. And I feel like it's a national, like that should be a national play that should be shown every time as an Embiid highlight.
I tweeted every game, every time they play the Sixers, try to blow it up. That was so nasty. The right-handed hook shot fake, Embiid's in the air. Al Jefferson spins right around him, wide open. Oh, it was so beautiful.
I mean, that should be like every time everybody's talking trash about Embiid, that should be the video they show. Well, Embiid, at least we didn't get beat by 35-year-old Al Jefferson or whatever old he was.
I need to find it in my streamable just so I have it ready. Yes, I found it.
So I think what you should do too is you should tweet that video when you post the podcast on our feed. That's like a thread because that will be.
I will. I'll keep it up. That's my favorite play.
Or like the headline for this podcast will be "Remember when Al Jefferson just made Embiid look dumb."
Is that my computer? There it is. I have it as Jefferson spins Embiid.
I'm gonna put that as the headline of this up. Podcast.
I'll download it now. I appreciate you having me do that.
Anything else you got for the day's? Anything else you got for today's show?
No, I really enjoyed this week of Pacers basketball. I think we finally saw what people have been saying that they would be this year. So that was good.
Yep, they keep executing in close games. Anything you're writing this week you want to preview up?
I actually have something coming out about two things that aren't super Pacers related. I have a Mad Ants thing. They opened their season last Friday. This is like a very tiny blurb that no one cares about but me. Two-way contract player Devon Reed, 25 points, 14 rebounds in the first G League game. So keep an eye on that. And then Joe Young has his third straight 40-point game in China. I'll have something about that up too.
Joe Young, the guy who got formed by Embiid because he stole the ball from him. Also last year.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. I don't have anything else for this podcast either. As always, you can read my stuff at IndyCornRows.com.
That's all for the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.